Hey guys, I just wanted to let you know that our first Inner Child workshop has filled up, so we opened up a second date. You can sign up to join us on November 5th. Just head to Megan's website. It's in the show notes. You can learn more, or you can sign up for the wait list if this date also fills up. Please reach out if you have any questions, and I hope you enjoy this episode. Hello and welcome back to Conversations with Moon Body Soul. Today we have Megan Bakva back on the podcast. If you listened a few episodes ago, she was on and we were discussing therapy, all about going to therapy, finding a therapist. It's a really great episode. You should go listen to it if you haven't heard it. But today we are going to be discussing a few other different topics, including our upcoming workshop, Rekindling Inner Child Immersion. So welcome back, Megan.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be here again.
How have things been since we last spoke?
Things have been good. So I think we spoke in May, and I had pretty much just been a month into starting my therapy practice. And so for the last 5 or so months, I've been seeing clients and just building my practice. And now I'm really excited to be expanding that even further outward and offering workshops. So we can talk a bit about that today.
Awesome. Yes, I'm so excited to be hosting this workshop with you. So if you guys haven't seen, the workshop will be on October 22nd at 4:30 p.m. Pacific time. And we will be diving into the inner child. If you're not familiar with the inner child, maybe you can explain a little bit more about what that is.
Yeah, that's a great question and a good place to start. The inner child is the idea that we all have within us versions of ourselves that are younger, that have been through something or a lot of things that have kept us locked in that place, in that situation, that can kind of trickle over into our present day situations.
So when I was seeing my therapist, I know she brought up working on the inner child, and she would say, like, what does little Katie want or need in this situation?
Yeah, I say that a lot to my clients. Inner child work comes out in a lot of different ways. I do tend to see clients who have had trauma in their past. So whether that's childhood trauma, complex trauma, intergenerational trauma. It's something that I'm really passionate about working with. And I think because of that, I've found clients in my practice already who are seeking out my support for those things. So it's a really good fit. But I think inner child work works well with trauma and works well with a lot of different presenting issues that a client might come to therapy for. So that makes sense. And I'm smiling because I say that exact same thing. Like, what does little Megan need? What does little Katie need?
Yeah, I really like that. And I know the first time that I think I was maybe introduced to this inner child idea was a few years ago in a yoga practice. And I don't even know if the teacher was talking about it, but I had this moment where I was standing at the top of my mat with my eyes closed. I think we were just in mountain pose with our hands at our heart. And I just visualized myself as a 5-year-old. And it just felt like, oh my gosh, that's me. And I'm this tiny little 5-year-old version of Katie right now at the top of my mat. And I just felt this immense amount of, what's the word that I'm looking for? Compassion. I felt like really a lot of compassion and empathy and a totally different reaction that I had to myself than I normally do, which is normally very critical and loud and definitely not compassionate towards the self. And it was a really moving, powerful experience. And then, yeah, the latest thing was that coming up in therapy. But I personally am really excited for this immersion because I will just be leading the grounding meditation and kind of holding space in that aspect. But I'm really excited to learn from you and take the workshop.
Thank you. I'm excited. And I think it's, as with many things of being a therapist, like, I'm drawing from a deep place within myself of inner child work and pulling from what I needed as a child and what I continue to need now because I didn't have that as a child. And creating this workshop from that place of everybody being able to dive deep into those places within themselves, looking at what is being perpetuated in their life now because of what they missed as a child. So that, you know, kind of taking a few steps back, maybe I didn't fully explain this, like as a child, from ages 0 to 6 is the most, you know, moldable time in our brain and our personality. Everything that happens then is super impactful. And everything after 6, it's like kind of everything's already baked in. So we come into this world so uninhibited and free and like a sponge, just ready to like absorb. But because of that, we lose a little bit of that playfulness and that inhibition. So these kind of traumas, whether they be little T traumas or big T traumas, can impact us in big ways that end up perpetuating some of those hardships throughout our life. So I'm really building this workshop from a place of each individual is unique, what their story is it unique, and the medicine that they need to kind of time travel, as you and I have talked about, Katie, back to those points in their life and be the person that they needed then is really my goal for everybody that attends.
I'm so excited for it. I know personally the reason why I want to attend and why I'm working on this inner child stuff and just my personal stuff is because I'm hoping to be a mom and have a baby. And I feel like this would be really valuable to work at all of this, because from what my understanding, every relationship is a mirror. And so when you bring a child into the world, I feel like that mirror is going to be huge for me. So that's a big reason why I want to join. But why do you think are some reasons why other people might want to join us? I know we have some listed on the website, so maybe we can just go through those.
Yeah, definitely. I think that list covers a lot of them. And then maybe we can talk about just how those might show up in people's lives.
If you want to deepen your relationship to all parts of yourself, if you're craving more playfulness, imagination, and joy, if you fear rejection or abandonment above all, if you feel inhibited from self-expression, if you're disproportionately triggered by lingering wounds, if you scroll, binge, or numb to cope or self-soothe, which, I mean, I feel like everybody's maybe in that.
Yeah.
If you have trouble connecting to your inner voice or honoring your needs, that's huge. You struggle with perfectionism and the urge to please others, or you carry guilt when you say no or prioritize yourself. So yeah, how can those things kind of show up, or if you want to elaborate on any of them?
Yeah, I mean, to a certain degree, all of these are parts of everyday life that I think most people will face at one point or another, especially like, you know, we and I both looked at each other with the scrolling, binging, and numbing, like, especially in our world today, those are coping tools that most people use. And I think that it's important to remember that it's everything in balance. So yes, we can scroll and binge and numb, but what else are we doing to address the things that are making us turn to those coping mechanisms more so than what we would consider more healthy coping mechanisms? But I think, you know, the first one, even you want to deepen your relationship to all parts of you. There's also this idea within therapy, there's a parts work theory where you can hold multiple parts of yourself at the same time. So in this given moment, you know, you and I, Katie, are sitting here as our 33-year-old selves, not to age us to the whole population, but as our 33-year-old selves. And then there might be a part of me present right now as well that's, I don't know, 10 years old and who is scared of public speaking, who's also here in the room, or a 16-year-old who went through a breakup that's, you know, has some lingering trauma with that. And so there's this idea that all these parts of us can exist at the same time. And it's not just limited to 1 or 3 or 10, it can be many parts. Really accepting each of those and then drawing from them to see why they're showing up in different situations and what they may need to feel better. And, you know, like the other bullet point said, like, you're disproportionately triggered by old wounds. So like one part of you might show up especially loud and like triggered by something that you feel like you've worked through and that it shouldn't be a problem. Like I said, like 16-year-old breakup, like shouldn't be a problem. We should be over that, but it's showing up. So what is it trying to tell us that's still lingering there?
Yeah, definitely. I feel like parts work was something that my therapist also introduced me to.
Was it helpful for you?
It was, but it was kind of like such a new idea to try to visit each of those parts of myself. It definitely was emotional when she brought it up. But I feel like now when I'm confronted with a big reaction that I'm having, I'm quicker to be like, what is, like, where is this coming from? Why is this reaction coming up versus just allowing the reaction to take me for a ride? I feel like it's helped me kind of take a step back and pinpoint, like, when did this first come up for me and why is it something that I'm having now?
Yeah, parts work and inner child work are kind of part of the same theory, or they kind of work together. And I think that makes sense that that would have been how you introduced it to yourself. And part of what's so, you know, profound to me is that we can a lot of times look back on our past selves, these parts of ourselves that are younger, even if it's like for me, even 5 to 10 years ago, and have compassion for them. And yet, like you said, we don't live with that compassion for ourselves on the day to day in our present. So that's what I like to invite in a lot when I'm bringing up a client's inner child in session. Like, how would you talk to that person, that part of you, and like trying to build the bridge to feeling that in the present moment? It's very profound.
I like that explanation of it. One of the other ones that I would love to dive into a little bit more is the struggling with perfectionism and the urge to please others or people pleasing.
Yeah, it's a big one.
Definitely something I've worked through.
Yeah. So I think a lot of us grew up in families that we had to learn how to earn love. And a lot of the ways we do that is by being perfect. So for some people, it's like academically perfect. For others, they had to just be like a good girl or a good boy, polite, nice, share their toys, like not be, have big emotions in front of people, not cause conflict. All these things can help our parents manage us when we're young, when they're, you know, we can have compassion for our parents too. They got parenting advice. They were a product of their culture and they were trying to go to work and, you know, make ends meet and give us the lives that they thought we deserved most of the time. But in telling us to behave or to not be so sensitive or to go get good grades or study harder or any of these early messages we got about what, how to earn love, even if it wasn't in that context, that's how we learned what it means to, yeah, be loved and how we have to behave in the world to do that. So that's important for our survival as children to make it through the family system. But when those habits persist into our adult life, they're not as helpful and they disconnect us from ourselves. So we end up walking around the world, prioritizing everybody else. And this small part of us, this young part of us, is just constantly hurting because we're not getting to honor ourselves and our needs because we're prioritizing others and what they need. When the truth is that we're all intrinsically, inherently worthy of love. And of course, that, you know, we want to have decorum and behave in society. But if you're not hurting anyone, and you are a person of good intention, then I think that there should be room for everybody to be a little bit more expressive with what they need and how they feel.
Yeah, and it's kind of wild when you think about when we were growing up, like how you mentioned earning love or like acceptance by acting a certain way or doing a certain thing. But when you get old enough and you're an adult, you realize like it's your yourself that you need to please. But if you've never really thought of that, like, what do I want, or how do I get in touch with that? It makes it a lot harder to even, like, you almost just start doing people pleasing to please everyone else because you don't even know what you want.
Exactly. If it goes on long enough, you don't even know your preferences, because you might have been so hypervigilant to everyone around you for so long that it's like, you know, I don't even know what I want to go out to eat if I was given the choice, because when I'm in a group environment, when I'm with my family, my friends, I'm like, oh yeah, whatever you want. Where do you want to go? You know what I mean? So it's hard to know. I guess that's kind of an oversimplified example. A lot of us like at least have one go-to, like favorite food or favorite color, but it's like, where do I want to live as an adult? That's a big one. Like, you grew up in your hometown and maybe you went to college, but then you came back and you're like, do I want to live here, or am I just here because this is where I grew up and this is what's kind of been set in stone for me?
Well, it's kind of wild too, because it's not just our familial relationships that have conditioned us to be these people pleasers. It feels like society as a whole, I mean, the way that our school system works, or traditional school system, I know there's other types of school systems now, but as a young kid, you're taught to like follow the rules, sit in your chair, look straight ahead, don't stray. And you know what your life looks like up until, I mean, college, sometimes after college. So you have the first 20 or so years of your life planned out.
Yeah.
And when you get to this age, when we're in our 30s, or you're just older, you're like, wow, there's no one telling me what I need to be doing right now.
Absolutely. Especially if you don't go automatically like through that pipeline to like a corporation or some other big system. But I do think that like schools, and that's why, you know, most of us start first grade at least around 5-6 years old. And that's that kind of cutoff where everything is already baked in. And then you just go straight into the system of being cooperative, getting your work done. And if you don't get your work done or you get bad grades, there's, you know, systemic ways of dealing with that within the schools. And I think for a lot of us, that's a lot of our first little T traumas happen at school, because you don't get to learn what you want to learn. You don't always get to wear what you want to wear, or eat what you want to eat, or say how you feel. You're just like, most of your day or most of your time is at the school where you are kind of in the box. And that's why I wrote in that Instagram reel that we made, coloring outside the lines, because I think that's a big metaphor for all of this as well, of learning to play within the rules, play within what's expected of you, not speak up, be a good girl, be a good boy, not color outside the lines.
I mean, that was literally, I went to school right before I turned 5, because my birthday is right on the cutoff at August 20th. And so I had to go like take a test to see if I could go into school. And I literally had to color inside the lines. Yeah, that was like literally one of the requirements.
Yeah, like why? And then just like standardized testing and everything. There's like one answer. There's one way to show the answer. Even like doing math problems, like you didn't get the full credit for getting the right answer if you didn't show that you did it the way they taught you to do it.
I think it's even gotten more crazy now.
Yeah.
With core math.
I don't know that much about it. I've seen TikToks of like parents like making fun of the way it is now. But I've heard that it's changed a lot. I even think about it though too with like writing, the way we were taught to write an essay of like, this is your subject sentence or your thesis. And then like you do like 3 paragraphs like proving that. And even with like research papers in college and grad school, it's like building on that same idea that we learned in 5th grade. Like you go and you study other people's ideas and you use their ideas to prove your point. It's not like an original idea a lot of the times. At least that's how my program was.
No, that's definitely what I remember about school too.
Yeah.
Yeah. These systems, I mean, it makes sense, like being a part of a group and being able to be like a productive member of society. Like it definitely makes sense, but there's so many ways in which that can hold us back from even, like we said, knowing what we want and knowing what we want our lives to look at like. Because yeah, at the end of the day, like, we're only this age once. We only get to do this part of our lives once. Mm-hmm. And I think getting in touch with that voice is really powerful. And again, going back to what I said about why I'm very excited to join this group is because I want to be a parent myself, but I love what you said about having compassion for our parents, because even if I do all this work and I try to be the most caring and thoughtful parent ever, I'm gonna give my child wounds. It's just impossible not to. There's gonna be certain things that get passed down. So I think even if you had a quote unquote perfect childhood,
yeah,
there's still gonna be things that come up for you as you get older.
Absolutely. I think any relationship, even not relationships, like even with acquaintances or like going around the world, like you have interactions with the person who makes your coffee or bags your groceries, we have the potential to wound everyone if we're not being conscious about what we need and our connection to ourselves. But I heard a quote that I wanted to tell you. I've been saving it up to tell you because I wanted to tell you on the pod. Our parents' ceiling is our floor. So what they strove for to give us, and like the ceiling they like envisioned of life, is our floor. And then we're building for our future and our kids from that floor. So it will be a level up because we've learned from them, and we might not repeat the same mistakes that they did, but we'll inevitably have some different areas that we struggle with our kids. And that's, I guess, that's life, because life keeps moving, culture keeps changing, and we're all just, for the most part, you know, there's obviously bad things that are inexcusable that happen within parenting and families. For the most part, I think parents and people are doing their best. And that's like a hard thing to have compassion for as well, but it's also liberating.
For sure. And I think that compassion for my parents is probably going to grow exponentially when I become a parent, just because then you're like, whoa, you'll get to see it for yourself and understand it a little bit more. I really like that quote.
I knew you would.
I don't know if I've talked about this on the podcast before, and I wish I had the exact study in front of me right now, but I don't. But it's this idea of how we pass down trauma through our genes, through generations. And they've done studies, yeah. I believe it's on mice, where they played a certain note and then they shocked them. And then for generations afterwards, that note gave the mouse like a fear response, even though it never got shocked.
Yeah.
But like its parents did, its grandparents did. So I'm wondering if you have any insight on that, or like how confronting our traumas and the things that trigger us now can help generations. Is that like a way out there idea, or is that something that is like accepted?
That study, and I don't know if we're talking about the same one, but there's been a few studies like that on the intergenerational transmission of trauma. And those like findings are so like far reaching. Like that, the one that I saw was the mice got shocked every time they went to go eat something or go like interact with some sort of stimulus. And so eventually even the next generation of mice that weren't involved in the study at all, obviously it was their parents, didn't ever go towards that stimulus. So like that fear response is passed down. So if fear is passed down to us, like I think about that a lot too with like racism or anything in society that we fear in one another, like it's just built into our DNA. Or if like your family went through like an immigration or anything like that, or like the Holocaust, like that sort of trauma, fear of others, or belief that others don't have your best interest in mind or you are less worthy, could be passed down as well. So I think that this area of research is huge, and it's not a far out there idea. And I'm so happy that people are starting to realize the impacts of, whether, you know, obviously like things like the Holocaust and these big things that I just named, we know that that's obviously going to have an impact. But if we can prove like in research that this is intergenerational trauma is real, then we have so much more awareness of how far that reaches into like just even maybe smaller things.
Yeah. Even just a smaller thing that I think of is my great grandma. For some reason, she always thought people were like out to get her. That was just like a core belief that she had, that people were out to get her. And I see that show up in myself. And I'm like, is that something that is passed down? Like that was something that my grandma told me, my mom told me about my great grandma. Is that something that like could be passed down, that we still feel like for some reason our reaction when things happen is like, oh, that person's out to get me.
I think so. And I think even being a woman, most of us are raised to be fearful of men by our moms or the women around us, or maybe not even just necessarily of men, but of the world, of our bodies, of our sexuality, of our beauty. It's, at least I can talk personally, like that was something that was passed down to me, like wanting to protect myself all the time to avoid those things. So my inner child has this fear of just even, you know, stepping outside the front door. There's these fears that are important for us to have, you know, like that kept me safe. And we can like look at that and understand that. But then there's something different that we can look at too with inner child stuff of like, I understood that being perfect would keep me safe, that getting good grades would keep me safe. But really, is that important? And I can say like, no, like now as an adult, I can look back and say, I'm glad I got through school. I'm glad I went through college and all that. But that was more of like a threat that I could let go of. Like my world, my life wasn't going to end if I wasn't scared of getting a B. But the fear of my, you know, like being hypervigilant of my surroundings, maybe that's a helpful fear, but it's still something to work through with inner child work of like parsing apart how that's affected us.
Yeah. And that's really fascinating because it seems like almost all things have both sides mm-hmm. of like, is it's helpful to an extent until it's not. Mm-hmm. And it's like hindering us.
I think that's the hardest part about being a parent. I mean, I'm not a parent, but I can see how every decision you make, you can see both sides and all the gray areas of the repercussions that could potentially happen. And so we never know. Like, we could be too lenient and then our kids go one direction. We could be too strict and then our kids go the other direction. And which one's worse or better?
It's almost like we have to be in that gray, though.
Yeah. And, you know, it's coming to terms. I think something else with our society that I remember you and I learned about this in our yoga teacher training, like the Tibetan Book of the Dead and how they deal with life and death and all the rituals around that. And I think in our society, death is something that we like hide or skirt around the subject of, and especially with kids, a lot of kids are like hidden from dealing with that out of good intention, I'm sure. But if you are so afraid of death, and you don't grow comfort around it, then living in that gray area is hard because like loss is such a big fear.
And it's inevitable.
It's inevitable.
Like you're going to have to confront it at some point.
Exactly. So if we're still holding on tight to everything, relationships, our pets, our kids, our jobs, without like having that like healthy fluidity with knowing everything is uncertain and everything is impermanent, then we're going to have a lot of trouble when the normal ebbs and flows of life show up.
Mm, so true. One of the things I'm so excited about doing this group work, I wish I had like the actual stat again in front of me. I should prepare more for these podcasts. But there is something to be said about doing this type of work in a group setting. I'm trying to think of the exact stat it is, but they've done a study where they see tremendous amount of healing, or I don't know how you would quantify that, versus doing the same kind of work one-on-one in therapy, because you are seeing other people move through stuff and it almost gives you more compassion for yourself because you see yourself in them and you see them unfold. So I am really excited to do this type of work in a group. Although we did have a question on Instagram asking how much is going to be like sharing and how much do participants need to show up versus like, are we going to be experiencing? So I'd love to dive into that a little bit more if you want to.
Yeah. I think group work can be incredibly healing. I think especially so like after these last 3 years of being, for me, I know that my life became way more inward and more separate from groups and this type of work, even, you know, like not going to yoga classes for so long or working in an office anymore. I feel disconnected from that part of myself that thrives on learning from the people around me. And I'm trying to find ways to get back into that myself. So I don't know exactly the study you're referring to, but I do think that there is plenty of evidence on like the power of group therapy or group community kind of led experiences. And that's why, you know, people love festivals and people love retreats and like healing type immersions with groups. I think it's very powerful. At the same time, I think that for a lot of people, it's still more confronting to show up in a group to do this work. So my intention with making this group kind of a mix is that we're going to come together. We're going to introduce ourselves as a group, call each other in. You know, I'm going to encourage everybody to be on camera as much as they feel comfortable with it. Of course, they could turn it on or turn it off whenever they feel like it. We're going to set like share intentions for the 2 hours together. And then the majority of the time spent after that is going to be learning. There's going to be about 20 minutes of just a talk about the nervous system and the inner child and kind of just maybe more in depth of what you and I have been discussing so far. And then we're going to do 3 activities. And then we're going to do a long form kind of yoga nidra meditation to integrate everything that we've worked on. And then again, we're going to come together as a group and do just a little closing circle, just to close on a contained note. So we have those 2 touch points at the beginning and the end to feel like we've all shown up here together for a reason. We all are humans and have these same yearnings to heal and to work through this. And I just think it's so special that no matter how different our stories are, no matter how different our childhoods are, and we still come together under these same ideas. Like every time I write something for Instagram or when I created this page for the Inner Child Workshop and, you know, part of what you read, and then people say like, everything on that list, I needed that. It's like some like cosmic spiritual thing there where I can just like put this series of words together from my own experience and my own heart of what I want to offer. And then there's other humans that are like, yes, this is what I need. Like that is such a spiritual, otherworldly feeling to know that we're all connected under these things, despite all our differences. I think that we'll feel like we're in community, but we're also going to be having very individual experiences through the activities, the 3 activities. And then also, of course, the nidra is always an individual experience. Like I'm doing a meditation and everybody's hearing the same thing, but the amount of different visualizations and places people will go with that nidra is going to be just mind blowing, I'm sure.
What you said too, like this group setting, you definitely feel like you're not alone, even though you're working on yourself, which I really love. And then obviously individual therapy, you get to go deeper. And there's so many benefits to that. I don't want to write that off. But yeah, in the group, you don't feel so alone as you're moving through whatever it is you're working on, even if it is different. Because you're right, people are showing up to this for so many different reasons. And we all had different childhoods and things that we want to look back on. But I'm so excited. And that's why I love, hosting the Moon Circles. I feel this every time I host, which I have not done in a while. Sorry, guys. but I love that. I love that group mind and that connection that we all have, even as we do our different things.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I think that this is something I want to continue offering. I don't know in what capacity. It's only been, 2 days since we announced the workshop, maybe 2.5 days. And we already are more than halfway full. And I think that this is something that can be translated into a lot of different ways, like a course, like something that you could just download the different things and do it by yourself if you're not into the group thing or the live kind of experience. I would love to at some point record one of those like nidra meditations and put it on Insight Timer or on my own website or something like that. It's something I'm super passionate about. It's like a lens through which I view therapy and I view like the human condition. Whereas, you know, CBT and DBT and some of the things that we were talking about in our last little conversation about therapy, those are so important because they're well-studied like approaches to therapy. This is kind of something you can integrate into every therapy or every situation you find yourself in life, of like a very tangible framework or tool to dive into whatever you're going through.
I can't wait to see what you do with that. I would love it if you did some recordings. I do want to just side note mention too, the workshop that we are holding will not be recorded in any way.
Right.
Just so people know that.
Absolutely.
But we might host it again too. So if you can't make this one, check back. One thing I do want to kind of dive into, especially now as you've taken on more clients and you're doing more of this work, holding space for others, how are you better caring for yourself when it comes to holding space and being there for other people? How do you then come back and care for yourself? Like, what has this shown you?
Yeah, I think that it sounds cliche, but boundaries are so important for me with my professional life, leaving that a conversation that could be so heavy and deep with a client. And then just like, because I work from home, closing my computer and walking away, you know, I write my notes and, you know, wrap up. But I really need to have that moment of like, okay, this was my time with my client. And now I'm like walking away and I'm back in my life. And there's a mental separation there for me. Even like this office, my room, I don't do much else in here except see clients. So that's like, it's like a physical boundary as well as like the time boundary of like, that was my time working. And now I'm going to close my laptop. I'm going to leave this room and going to go back to my life and do what I need to do for myself. So some of the things I do after I have that like hard boundary is, I think it's so important to keep promises to yourself. I always do Yoga Girls, Rachel Braven's New Year's podcast. She has like a whole reflection segment. And then the next one is a whole goal setting. So I've done that for 3 or 4 years in a row, I think. And so this year I had a few goals. Two of them that I'll mention because they're related are walking 8,000 to 10,000 steps a day. And the other one was journaling every day. And I have kept up with those things. And it's because I made that promise to myself. It blows my mind that just because I made that promise to myself, I kept up with it. And I think that is another part of what we've been talking about, is rebuilding that trust with yourself is so important, like that connection to yourself. I think at the beginning, I didn't even really know why those things were so important to me. Maybe they were just like something that sounded good on paper. Like, I'm going to journal every day. I'm going to fill notebooks. I'm going to see those big step counts on my phone or whatever. But now it's the most important part of it is that I'm keeping that promise to myself. And that's like bringing back a sense of connection to myself and self-trust, which I think in a lot of ways I have lost through my own inner child wounds.
That self-trust is huge. I just saw a TikTok of someone saying, like, if you had a friend who promised to meet you at the gym and 10 times in a row they didn't show up when you showed up, like, would you even trust that friend anymore? Would you even call them and tell them you're going? Like, no, you wouldn't. So when you do that to yourself too, it just creates such a big disconnect and you lose confidence in yourself really fast. So those little steps of building the trust is so huge.
Yeah. And I think it's also being realistic with yourself is super important, because knowing the emotional capacity you have at any given moment, you know, taking into account your work, the type of work you do. Thankfully, I love doing therapy, like listening to other people, whether as a therapist or as a friend, has never been a burden to me. So it's not about that. It honestly, working in corporate was a way bigger emotional burden for me, but just understanding yourself to know that and then say, okay, what is realistic to me to add to my life on top of that to take care of myself? Because if you're saying I'm going to run a mile every day and that's not in your wheelhouse or something that's emotionally or physically, energetically possible for you, then that's another breach of trust for yourself. It's like asking your kid to do something that they don't have the capacity for. So why would you ask yourself to do something that you don't have the capacity for? And I think going along with that, something I also think is really important to taking care of myself, it's also boundaries, is saying no. Because I can add all the things, like go do the self-care yoga and meditation and the journaling and the walking and the therapy and all the things, but if I'm not saying no to the things that truly don't feel possible, if I'm not canceling on a plan, even when I don't want to, then that's another breach of trust. That's another way that I'm betraying myself and not showing up for my honest needs in that moment. So I think saying no is as important, if not more important, than saying yes to what does feel good, that does nourish you.
Yeah. And I mean, hearing your promises that you're keeping to yourself of journaling every day, like that is one that I know would not be a great goal for me, because I personally have let my journaling practices go so completely that trying to do it every single day now would be like from 0 to 60. Way too hard for me.
Yeah. And that, I mean, you have to know what your thing is, I think. What promises have you kept for yourself, or how are you taking care of yourself?
This is me interviewing you.
I know there's ways though, because I'm your friend. I know that there's things that you do. Like you're working out as well. That's something I could never do. You're like weightlifting.
Actually, it was in March. Bentley and he's been working out on this app for a really long time and doing strength training. We have like loose weights in our gym. And it was around then that I made the commitment to do 5 days a week. And I did that for a really long time. I think all the way through July. Since then, I've like lost the streak. I'm not doing it 5 days a week, but I am making a commitment, especially when I feel in my body or I feel stressed, I feel just overall not good, that I ask myself, well, did I go move my body today? That's more the commitment I'm making now, not the 5 days a week, but just asking myself, did I do that? And if I didn't, no matter what mood I'm in or how uncomfortable or I feel like I don't have the time, I go down there and do it anyways. And that has been huge.
I think as long as you're having that honest dialogue with yourself and checking in with yourself, that's more important than the streak. And I wanted to mention that before, like journaling, I'm like writing a page of my thoughts down. Sometimes I'm making more of like a gratitude list or something like that. And there are days and nights that I am dreading it. I like stay up scrolling on my phone late just because I am like dreading journaling. But then I do it anyway. But I think it's more important for the things that are a big lift, you know, like working out, step count, things like that, or eating a certain way, or, you know, reading a certain amount of books, things that are actually like taking up like a decent amount of time or energy, to be checking in with yourself and, you know, not just being rigid and keeping that promise to yourself, like blindly and pushing through something that isn't serving you. I think I learned that in previous years of setting these goals, in addition to being mindful of what works and like what's possible, I also had to be honest with the fact that I had to be able to adapt and shift those goals if they weren't working. Because if I didn't have that mindset of being able to like work with myself, then I would just be like, oh, well, it's like all or nothing mentality. I like screwed up and it's like March and I'm like, well, the whole year's a wash. And it's like, no, like you can just revisit the goal and then make it work for you for this season of your life.
That's so true, especially when it comes to something physical, because if you're a woman and you're moving through a cycle every month physically, you are different week to week, day to day. And so I have to kind of check in and be like, yes, moving my body does help me, but is that what would make me feel good right now, is to lift weights, or is that too much today? And sometimes the answer is that's too much today. Go lay out on the deck or like stretch. Yeah. I'm trying to think of other things. I definitely have kept the promise to myself to eat and drink water before having coffee in the mornings. And that has changed so much for me. That has changed so, so much for me. So I always make sure that I eat, even if all I want to do is just go make a coffee. I'm so tired. I chug water, I eat food, and then I do it. That's helped a lot. Just with my overall, I'm doing it for hormone health and stomach issues and just, you know, not taking caffeine straight first thing in the morning.
Not chugging fuel first thing.
Yeah.
jet fuel on an empty stomach.
Yeah. Even though that's like, oh, that's what sounds good right now. I can't listen to that part of myself because I know how it pans out. So I'd love to dive in though, how you can hold space for others, because you have to show up to your job no matter what. Like, you're a professional space holder. Like, you have to be there for people. And I know you said it fills you up and it's something that's really conducive to your lifestyle. But especially on days where that even feels hard, how can you show up for others? Because I know people in their day-to-day lives, I think this will kind of translate, even just showing up for their friend or their partner or whoever that maybe needs them. What are some things that you do to help hold space for others?
Yeah, I think we're all kind of like what we talked about earlier. Everyone that we are interacting with on a day-to-day basis, whether it's the person that makes our coffee or someone at our office or a family member or a friend reaching out for support, we all have the potential to help or hurt each other. So for me, it's a gift that I feel I have that I want to help others and that I love connecting with others and hearing their stories. So for me, it's not something I have to try for. But with others, I've noticed that, every client has a different way of receiving help or even like love languages. We all have a different way to receive love. And so I think it's important to realize that we all have a different way of processing emotions. And so I've noticed that for me, because I love to hold space for other people, like I don't think of others as not having that same capacity sometimes. So it's been a learning curve for me to understand that not everybody in my life is also a therapist wanting to go into the depths with me of understanding my inner child or whatever it may be. And so something that's important that I've learned is checking in with other people of if they're coming to me for support, like, do you just want to be heard right now? Do you just want to get things off your chest? Do you want me to give you advice? Do you want to just sit together and do nothing? And asking clarifying questions when there's, information coming to me that I don't know exactly how to handle. And then in reverse, asking somebody before I unload on them, especially if there's someone who I don't know if it's like a safe space or if they have a lot on their plate. Can you receive this right now? Is this a good time to talk? And if not, that's totally okay. And Katie, I know you and I do this a lot, and we've talked about how for neither of us it's a burden, but I think it's important to remember that every day is different for everybody, and we don't always know what somebody's inner world looks like, no matter what it's looked like the day before. If they've shared with us, it might be different, or people change and situations change and energy fluctuates. So I think getting consent and kind of an idea of what the other person is looking for is super important in that way.
Wow, yeah, it's very similar to what we're talking about not abandoning yourself and having that conversation with yourself. The same answer is like communication with other people and just letting that be out in the open.
I saw this quote too about codependency, which is similar to people pleasing. And it was codependency is one person's inner child's attempt to save the other person's inner child. And I've been thinking about that a lot too, of, we all, for the most part, like I've said, like share good intentions of like, just wanting to get through our day or wanting to genuinely help someone, but intentions don't negate impact. So, we could have the best intentions with something, but our impact is different. So I think about this a lot with, parents and our inner child. Like a lot of times parents will say, well, I didn't mean to, like, can't you just let it go? Like that wasn't I meant for it to happen, but the impact is still there.
I see that in my relationship, even though with my partner with Bentley. Like, just because I don't intend something to be taken a certain way, it doesn't change the fact that it was. And it's been really hard for me. One thing I struggle with, I'll just be honest with you guys, is apologizing, especially when like the intention is like my intentions were pure. So it's like, why do I need to apologize? That's been something for the past 10 years I've had to confront of like, it doesn't matter.
Did people apologize to you when you were a child?
That's a really good question. I actually, oh man, repair wasn't something that I feel like was done much in my family. And I think that is like huge to be able to repair and like understand how to repair. And I feel like that's not something that I was raised with.
Yeah, I think a lot of us didn't learn to have healthy conflict and conflict resolution. So it's scary to step into that place because you have to trust that you're going to get through the other side without like plates flying and doors slamming. And then for a lot of us, when we saw that there was no resolution as a child, we were just like left to try to understand it ourselves. And that could really be traumatic for a child who doesn't understand and might internalize the blame because nobody is giving them an alternate way to understand what's going on. And it's easier to blame yourself than blame your caregivers, typically, because you need to rely on your caregivers. And as a child, like, putting them in like a bad category is hard to reckon with when you also need to trust them to help you survive.
Yeah. And I don't want to generalize like a whole decade, but it feels like the 90s was a lot of like, well, we don't talk about that. We sweep it under the rug, which I think translates into even like if there was big reactions or fights or anything, it was just like, oh, let's just pretend that didn't happen.
Yep. Yeah. Sweep it under the rug. And it's interesting to think like, you know, with Gen Z or, you know, our generation, as we go on to have kids and they grow up with more openness, I mean, definitely Gen Z's kids will be more open, I think, but what will then their kids struggle with, you know, because it's always going to be something.
Yeah. Unfortunately. There's no perfect way to do it.
Yeah.
Well, I've enjoyed this chat so much with you. I would love to wrap up with rapid fire questions, but I'm trying to think of what were ones that I asked you last time. So maybe these, I'll keep them all kind of more to this season. Like, what is your favorite part about fall?
I love this question. I love fall. It's always been my favorite season. I love all the things, sweaters, pumpkin things, flavors. But I think like the common thread through everything of fall that I love is like the sensory stuff of it, like the smells of the cinnamon and the pumpkin and the feeling of like the sweaters and the coziness and the crispness in the air. So it's all that like really sensory stuff that really gets me, because I've lived in LA most of my life and those kinds of sensory things are hard to come by.
That's a good answer. Do you dream at night when you sleep?
Yes, I do.
Do you work with your dreams? Do any sort of dream work or journaling or?
I don't. Sometimes I'll write about it when I journal, but my belief about dreams is that we are processing like stories that we are dealing with in our day-to-day life. So like people show up in different ways and we're like processing unprocessed emotion and energy in our dreams. But I also think that while that's happening in our brains, like while we're here, like in our brains having like an experience of processing, like I think our souls are like up in the heavens or wherever, like with source, like recharging our batteries or doing some other sort of work.
What if there was a place you could travel anywhere in the world, leave tonight, where would you go?
I'd go to Bali. I love Bali, and I haven't been since 2016, and I was there for like 3 weeks, but I've been wanting to go back ever since. And it's like tempting to want to go somewhere new, but I didn't spend enough time there, so I know I would like going back.
Do you have any final words that you want to share before we close up?
Yeah, I think it's just like a very big honor to talk about human condition, therapy, trauma, all these things that just connect us, and that this is my job. I don't take it for granted. I think it's such a gift that I get to sit with people and hold their stories and help them make meaning and make change that will hopefully help them live more peaceful and fulfilled lives. And I don't take that for granted. And I don't take for granted that I get to sit here with one of my best friends and have important conversations that hopefully help other people. I hope to get to do much more of this type of work. And if anybody feels like we would be a good fit to work together and they're in California, they can reach out and say that they heard me here, and we can definitely work out a discount for you, because I would love to hear from you. And if you want to come to our workshop, it's open to everyone all over the world. If you want to show up at 4:30 p.m. PST, wherever that is in your time, we have a few more spots. And like we said, if there's more demand, we'll definitely do these again.
Yeah, there'll be a link to the page below in the show notes, but it's just on Megan's website, meganbakva.com. You can find it there. And yeah, reach out, especially if you're hearing this after the workshop has passed, if you'd like us to lead something similar. But thank you, Megan. I'm so excited that you came on, and I don't take this for granted either. I love having you on.
Oh, thank you. Love you.
Love you. Thank you so much for listening to Conversations with Moon Body Soul. Be sure to follow if you don't want to miss an episode. If you liked what you heard, leave a review and a rating. And if you want to email over any special guests or topic suggestions, email hello@moonbodysoul.com.